one's a slave in Egypt. Shouldn't that mean something to us for what we know about the future? Nobody's free. Here's what I want you to ponder. It's not governments that provide for you guys. Look at what God is showing you. But Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there. Israel lived in Goshen, full and provided under the gracious reign of Joseph. They were getting a foretaste of what was held out for them when they reached the promised land, and ultimately the ultimate goal of it all, when they sat under and lived forever under the gracious reign of Christ.
Talk about a black and white comparison. You've got the slavery of Egypt or the freedom of Goshen. And it all depends on where your heart lies. Welcome to Abounding Grace Radio. Let's catch up with Pastor Chris in Genesis 47. Jacob taps out. Here's Pastor Chris.
Now there was no food in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us food. Why should we die before your eyes? For our money is gone." And Joseph answered, "Give your livestock, and I will give you food in exchange for your livestock if your money is gone." So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the herds, and the donkeys. He supplied them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. And when that year was ended, they came to him the following year and said to him, "We will not hide from my lord that our money is all spent. The herds of livestock are my lord's. There's nothing left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we with our land will be servants to Pharaoh. And give us seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not be desolate." So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For all the Egyptians sold their fields because the famine was severe on them. The land became Pharaoh's. As for the people, he made servants of them from one end of Egypt to the other. Only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had a fixed allowance from Pharaoh and lived on the allowance that Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. Then Joseph said to the people, "Behold, I have this day bought you your land for Pharaoh. Now here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And at the harvest, you shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and 4/5 shall be your own, as seed for the field, as food for yourselves and your households, and as food for your little ones." And they said, "You have saved our lives. May it please the Lord, we will be servants to Pharaoh." So Joseph made it a statute concerning the land of Egypt, and it stands to this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth. The land of the priests alone did not become Pharaoh's. Thus, Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. And they gained possessions in it and were fruitful and multiplied greatly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. When the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, "If now I have found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place." He answered, "I will do as you have said." And he said, "Swear to me," and he swore to him. Then Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed. After this, Joseph was told, "Behold, your father is ill." So he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And it was told to Jacob, "Your son Joseph has come to you." Then Israel summoned his strength and sat up in bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful, multiply you, and I will make of you a company of peoples, and will give this land to your offspring after you for an everlasting possession.' And now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, as Reuben and Simeon are. And the children that you fathered after them shall be yours. They shall be called by the name of their brothers and their inheritance. As for me, when I came from Padan to show to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. When Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, "Who are these?" Joseph said to his father, "These are my sons whom God has given me here." And he said, "Bring them to me, please, that I may bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. So Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, "I've never expected to see your face. And behold, God has let me see your offspring also." Then Joseph removed them from his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on the head of Manasseh, crossing his hands, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys. And in them let my name be carried on, the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." When Joseph saw that his father had laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he took his father's hand to move it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, "Not this way, my father, since this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. Nevertheless, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations." So he blessed them that day, saying, "By you Israel will pronounce blessings, saying, God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh." Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, "Behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and will bring you again to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to you, rather than to your brothers, one mountain slope that I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword and with my bow." May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. As I was preparing this message, I thought it would be helpful to capture the life of Jacob using language from wrestling that is somewhat familiar to us, particularly the submission hold. The submission hold. Listen to this common description of the submission hold. When one fighter has his opponent held in a painful position where he can't move or escape, this is a submission hold. Left without any other options, the opponent is forced to either submit, tap out, give up, or deal with the extreme pain of a dislocated joint, torn tendons, or worse. What does that sound like? I want to begin this sermon with the wrestling match that occurred back in chapter 32. Remember what happened? The angel of the Lord wrestled down Jacob. And remember, he had put Jacob in a 7-hour submission hold. He couldn't move. It was a painful position. And he held, remember Jacob was held there till the breaking of the day. He had a choice. He could submit, or he could deal with the pain of a dislocated joint. What did he take? Took the dislocation. Walked with a limp. He was dislocated. As I gave reflection to this past week, I realized something about Genesis 32. We believe that the angel of the Lord is Christ. When Christ put him in a submission hold that day and changed his name, we witnessed a man who just would not tap out, wouldn't do it. It's been his life. The man would not tap out. It's fascinating when you put it in this language. Wouldn't submit. He would not submit. and the angel wouldn't let go. Hasn't that been the perfect imagery of this man's life as we have worked through it for some time and studied? Just a refusal to submit to the Lord. And I don't need to rehearse his life again. I've done a lot of that. I don't need to go through all the serious departures that we studied. You know the mess. You know what he did with his family. You know the real messes in this man's life that were consequences of his choices that he made. And even then, it made him sad and miserable throughout the course of his life. And last time he sat before Pharaoh. He sat before Pharaoh, and we get the moan. Oh, few and evil have been the days of my life, and they've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers and their pilgrimage. Well, this is where we really do pick up this morning. I was thinking of all that we've studied with Jacob, and what's so encouraging about it is throughout the whole course of this man's life, Christ did not let go of him. I don't know if there's any other figure in the Bible where if I were looking at Philippians 1 and I were saying the principle of he who begins the good work completes the good work, I don't know if I could show anyone else with more clarity of the truth of that doctrine than the life of Jacob. Of all the departures, of all the mishaps, of all the sin in this man's life, right at the end, we have a powerful presentation of submission. Of submission to Christ. And the contrast that we've seen and the everything that's being played out here, I believe the Lord wants us to see this clearly and to understand it so that all of us would say, with Jonah, salvation is of the Lord. It belongs to the Lord. But there's a message in all of this. There's a message in the life of Jacob, and the message is this: submit today. Tap today. Don't try to continue the wrestling match, because the hard life he lived were often due to the consequences of refusing to tap out. Refusing. And in that place of submission, in that place where the hold is, and you submit, you have the greatest place of blessing, the greatest place of happiness, the greatest place of joy that you'll find in life. There are three things that demonstrate this morning. This theme of submission that I'm working with. You'll see it here in three things that happen in this section that I've read. You'll see it in his bowing. You'll see it in his believing. And you'll see it in his blessing. It's really, really neat to see how this all plays out. Because what you have here at the end of his life are three deathbed scenes. In the last scene, he had come before Pharaoh, and he had made that moan. And I took it that way. I don't think you can read it another way, especially if all things are given by inspiration or profitable for so many different things that the man of God may be thoroughly equipped and trained in righteousness. That's not a good witness. You don't say that. The few and evil have been the days of my life, because it was patently untrue when you looked at it from what God was doing. And the text this morning opens up by saying it's certainly untrue that they were few, because when he stood before Pharaoh, he was 130 years old, and the text wants to make something very clear to us that he died at 147 to tell us he had 17 more years to enjoy Joseph, his son. And the reason that was important was that's when Joseph was stolen at 17. God gave it back, gave him back 17 more years at the end to enjoy his son, to live in that blessing, to live in that joy. It wasn't few, and it certainly wasn't evil. His choices may have been, but not God's workings. And so as we look at this morning, and now we move into this next section, what we have here are three deathbed scenes, and I find that remarkable. Why do I find that remarkable? Because no other patriarch gets this. Abraham's death was passed right over. It was quick. Isaac's death passed right over. But the text stops here, and it puts a giant spotlight right here on this long extended deathbed scene of Jacob to say, look at what God did in this man's life. So beautiful, so powerful. It's a remarkable ending to a life. And I mean that. It is a remarkable ending. And that's what you see today. Was Jacob still bitter? Was he still saying 17 years later now, few and evil been the days of my life as he bears witness to his sons? As we read the text, the first thing that strikes us is the emphasis again on how long, 17 years he was blessed with in Egypt. But then the text shifts. If you look back up, it has an interjection of something that happened, setting the scene for us a little bit of how hard life really was in Egypt. In verses 13 through 26 of chapter 47, you have a description of how bad the famine got in Egypt. It begins in verse 13 saying, this got really severe. All the people's monies. Now imagine the scenario here for a minute. All the people's monies that they had earned, all of it just went to getting food. There was no more excess. There were no more camel rides out in the desert. Just for food. All the excess was peeled away. It got that bad. And so what they did was every cent was used just to survive. That happened. Then the text tells us that all of their belongings became Pharaoh's because the people started, when the money ran out, they started paying with all the excess that they had had for all those years, and they started using all of that to buy food. Imagine that. No more money, and so now you're paying with your cars. You're paying with your boats. You're paying with everything else you have. That happened. What's next? Verse 18. When that year was ended, they came to him the following year and said, "We will not hide from my lord that our money's all spent, the herds and of livestock. It's all deeded back to Pharaoh. There's nothing left. There's nothing left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? By us and the land, we will be slaves to Pharaoh. And give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land may not be desolate." Can you imagine if things got so bad that your money was only spent on food, and when your money was all gone, you took all your belongings, and that's all you paid with, and then you were purchased by President Obama? Scary. Buy us. Now, why is this so striking? Everyone's a slave in Egypt. Shouldn't that mean something to us for what we know about the future? They're all slaves. Nobody's free. Nobody's free. Now, why do you think God is telling Moses and us when he wanted this inspired as they studied this? The first thing you should start thinking about is who are real slaves here, because we're in a section on submission, and who are real freemen. Ultimately, while governments are designed by God to for the good of society, they all run cycles of iniquity. You're in one. You all run cycles of iniquity. History has taught us this. That's why they've been taken out of the land, because the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. That has to run its cycle before they're brought back in. History's proven this, that governments ultimately do defect at some point. And what do governments do? They take. That's what's going to happen. But here's what I want you to ponder. Something was taught to Israel here. Over against all this, you have this stark contrast. It's not governments that provide for you guys. Look at what God is showing you. But Israel, verse 27. But Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there. Whoa. They had it. And they grew, and they multiplied. And if you look back up at verse 12, Joseph provided for them. What a marvelous thought. Israel lived in Goshen, full and provided under, and here's the imagery, under the gracious reign of Joseph. And what was this teaching them? They were getting a foretaste. and your understanding through this, they were getting a foretaste of what was held out for them when they reached the promised land, and ultimately the ultimate goal of it all, when they sat under and lived forever under the gracious reign of Christ. And the Lord always wanted us to know he'll provide for us. This is why he was saying throughout the Gospels, why are you worrying? I'm your king. It's not your president. I'm your king. And if you ask me, I'm not going to give you a stone if you need bread. No one else was free except Israel. Wasn't that a message for them heading into the 400 years of bondage? Who's really free? He'll shield you. He'll guide you. He'll protect you. He will bring you out, whatever afflictions. But that's not the place I'm fully going this morning. I want to now focus on Jacob. You have one of the most brightest moments of faith in the scriptures. You can learn a lot about a man on his deathbed. He's reflecting on his life. And in verse 29, we read that the time drew near for Israel, name choice, to die. Notice what he says to Joseph. I want you to swear to put your hand under my thigh. Put your hand under my thigh, that this was the way of making an oath. Here's the oath. Don't bury me in Egypt. Let me literally rest with my fathers. I want you to carry out my bones.
There's so much more ground to cover here in Genesis chapter 47 as Jacob says his farewells, and there is so much here to look at. And again, we'll do so next time we get together. You're listening to Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon, who will return in just a moment with a look ahead to our next broadcast. Questions, comments about the program, as always, are more than welcome. We'd love to hear from you. How's the program encouraging you in your walk and relationship with Christ? Reach out to us. Let us know, won't you? Our number is 888-504-8805. Or you can visit us online, agradio.org. Now, that is a great resource to have handy. Not only do we have past programs available online at our website, we also have jumping off points to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as recent articles written by Pastor Chris and other friends of the ministry. Again, agradio.org. We also would like to remind you that you're a very key part of this ministry, Abounding Grace Radio. Through your financial partnership with us and prayerful support, we are able to continue this ministry, not only on this station, but others as well. So would you please consider partnering with us financially, whether it's a one-time gift, a monthly gift, no gift is too small or too large. Reach out to us again at agradio.org or call us at 888-504-8805. As promised now, once again, here's Pastor Chris to look forward to our next broadcast.
I love this man's dying testimony. Picture him knowing he's dying, and he bows his head in worship. It's beautiful. He's worshiping on his bed. And then in the second deathbed scene, listen to what he's saying. God Almighty appeared to me at Luz. That's Bethel. Remember what happened to Bethel? A ladder dropped from heaven. Christ was at the top, and he declared a promise to me. It was unconditional. I didn't have to earn it. He confirmed his love for me, and he gave me. God Almighty appeared to me. Let me tell you about him, son. Let me tell you about my God, son. When I was running away from him, and I ran away from the promised land, and I did my own thing for many years of my life, on my run, he met me. And you know what he did? He said, from your body, I'm going to multiply you and make you, companies of peoples will come from you. And I'm going to give you everlasting life. I'm going to give you a land. I'm going to give you everything you could ever imagine. Everything that was promised to Abraham, everything that was promised to Isaac, Jacob, it's all yours.
This scene has been referred to as dying he worshiped. And to be sure, it was a tough life, a hard life, but a life that was ended nonetheless in the grace and love of Jesus Christ. Well, Pastor Chris will continue looking at this scene next time we get together here on Abounding Grace Radio. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.